Hey guys, Saturday night, let's talk some epistemology. Last time we talked about intuition, and I talked about my journey from being an engineer, I called it from engineer to intuitionist, which will still be a foundation as we go forward into some of these other ideas. And the next idea is this book called The Black Swan. For the video watchers here, I'm showing the title. It's by Nassim Taleb. It was a pretty influential book when it came out, and it might be one of my all-time top recommendations, honestly. It really is an amazing book, and he does ramble a good bit, and it gets a little long, but the nice thing about it is if you just read the first couple of chapters, you get a lot of the gist of it. So you don't have to be overwhelmed by the fact that it's over 300 pages and he kind of rambles. You can get the gist early on, and I really do highly recommend it. It will truly change the way you see the world. So let's get into it a little bit here. I think this, along with some other things I'm going to talk about later in later episodes, were some of the most influential things for my epistemology. Maybe this book by itself either is the most influential, or at least sums up where I am now in my epistemology more than anything else. So with that said, the subtitle is The Impact of the Highly Improbable. And that's what a black swan is. It's something completely unexpected, unpredicted, and that also has high impact. I think another way you could describe it is how to deal with the unknown. And that's probably the more generalized way that I take it, how it's affected me. And just to kind of jump in on some of the ideas, one thesis is we tend to think that we know more than we do. We tend to think that we have things figured out, that we can predict things, and we tend to think that a lot better, a lot more than we actually do. So a great example of this is looking back at history. We tend to think that we could have predicted a lot of things that have happened, whereas he would probably argue basically every significant historical event was almost entirely not predicted, and it was entirely unexpected. And he gives, I did write down one reference I wanted to read here about World War II, and this is World War II. And he talks about how most standard accounts you'll read in a history book will make it sound like, okay, escalating tensions, there were these precipitating events that you could have seen it coming, basically. But this is how he describes it. Only retrospectively was it seen as unavoidable by backward-looking historians. Ferguson, a book he's referencing, Ferguson used a clever empirical argument to make his point. He looked at the prices of imperial bonds, which normally include investors' anticipation of government's financing needs and decline in expectation of conflicts, since wars cause severe deficits. But bond prices did not reflect the anticipation of war. So basically, historians will look back and say, well, you can see how this and what Hitler was doing and blah, blah, blah. And it seems like it gives us this comfort that, oh, we can predict World War II. If it were to happen again, we'll see escalating tensions. We'll say, oh, this is going to happen again. But if you actually look at the hard data, which is how people were using their money, and people are probably not going to lie with that, then people didn't see it coming at all. And he gives some other quotes from newspapers of certain things being transient at the beginning of the war. So that's a lot of this book is actually disconcerting at first. And I think that's half the point, is to severely humble your view of your knowledge and everyone's knowledge, essentially, that we know a lot less than we think we do. We predict a lot worse than we think we do. And he also says, like, you can just take your personal life examples. Just think about 5 years ago, what your five-year plan was, if you had any sort of five-year plan, and then where you are now, and how you got there, and the twists and turns that happened. There are some of the most significant things were the most unpredicted. And another point of the book is that's usually a big reason they're significant, is because they were unpredicted. So we are naive to just pretend those are outliers, and therefore we can just sweep them under the rug. That's one of the points I definitely took home, is that, for instance, people, he started, I think, in the finance industry. That's where he started. And that you'll hear finance professionals say things like, well, these are just exceptions, these are just outliers. And his whole point is, but wait, this is the thing that matters, though. This, if you lost all your money on an outlier, you kind of care about the outlier. That, in fact, that's probably the only thing you care about. And same if it makes your fortune. That if you win the lottery as an outlier, well, you do sort of care about it. You can't just sweep that one away. And the lottery is really not a great example, because the outliers happen just in more mundane data. And I think a great example of this is the movie The Big Short and the financial crisis that it covers. And the whole point of it is a small number of really smart, wise finance professionals shorted the housing market, which was seen as insane because the housing market was always a sure bet. And that knowledge that the housing market had always been a sure bet hurt them, because it blinded them to the fact that there was funny business going on. And so here comes this black swan. And once again, you can't just say, oh, well, that's the outlier. Most of the time, the housing market does go up. And it's like, well, sure, most of the time it does, but who cares? Like, if every once in a while something crazy is going to happen that affects everything and is the most significant thing, then maybe we should be talking about that. And so immediately you might have the question, okay, well, if it's unpredictable, then what can we do about it? Maybe the people are right to just say they're outliers, because, I mean, what can we do about an outlier? We can't predict it, right? And there's a couple things wrong with that. Number one, it doesn't mean, just because it's unpredictable in general and unexpected in general, that doesn't mean you can't have fuzzy ideas of possibilities. So even if you can't pick out of the 100 possibilities, of the crazy 100 possibilities, which one is going to happen, you can still prepare for a crazy thing to happen. So that's one thing. Another thing, and this is potentially more disturbing, having limited knowledge can actually be worse than having no knowledge at all. And The Big Short is an example of that. Having limited knowledge, and that knowledge being that the housing market is a sure bet, has been so far, ended up being detrimental. If you had less knowledge and were total novice to the financial markets, you would say, wow, this is all very chaotic and I don't know what to do. And you would be protected from assuming the housing market was always going to go up. So a great scientific study of this, showing this, I was about to say proof, but then, I mean, those science people, you can't ever really prove anything. Back to epistemology. So, but anyway, a great scientific study that shows this is they showed a blurry image of a fire hydrant to two different groups of people. One group saw five stages of the image getting clearer and clearer. The other group saw 10 stages. So, and it started very blurry, where you couldn't tell what it is at all. You would think that the group that saw 10 stages would figure out it was a fire hydrant faster than the group that saw five stages, because the 10 stages was given more information along the way. It was the opposite. The group that saw five actually did better. And the theory is that the people that saw 10 stages of the image as it got clearer, their minds started forming preconceived ideas of what it was going to be that were wrong, and slowed them down from intuitively seeing a fire hydrant. So the people who saw the five stages only had less of a chance to form bad hypotheses along the way, and instead, halfway through, it just clicked and they saw a fire hydrant there. But the 10 stage people, they had all these ideas. They're like, it's a dog, it's a whatever. And then as it got closer, their brain had to work against itself to undo the false hypotheses. So it's just having I think this book shows how dangerous it is to not be aware of exactly what knowledge you have, to think you have more than you do, to think it's more sure than it is, that there's all these subtle ways that it trips you up, and that ironically, you might end up being better off having no knowledge. Circling back to the personal life examples, real quick, there's an interesting intersection here with improv. And I've done a decent amount of improv comedy. It's one of my favorite hobbies. And it really becomes a life philosophy for a lot of people. And it has for me in a lot of ways. And it really intersects with these sort of ideas because what improv does is it really implicitly takes the black swan sort of idea of we can't predict nearly as well as we think we can. We know what the right move in the moment will be. We know it ahead of time, not very well at all. We think we do. We think we know ahead of time. But when we get there, we actually do much better in the moment dealing with the data we have on hand right then than planning, for instance, 5 years ahead. So it actually intersects well with improv that improv, I think, has a much more humble epistemology. It's saying we can't pre-plan that well. So to move on from there, I think one of the best ways to sum up the impact this book has had on me, and also, I mean, I think what the purpose is it sort of flips what you focus on. That the naive epistemology is you're constantly focusing on gaining knowledge, on what knowledge you have and gaining it. And actually, this is a quote from the book. It says that black swan logic makes what you don't know far more relevant than what you do know. Or that's a very close paraphrase, at least. So basically, you start focusing on the possibilities of the unknown rather than just obsessing over gaining knowledge. And another way to say it is that you focus more on kind of meta knowledge. You focus on the landscape of knowledge and possibilities rather than simply, once again, just trying to gain knowledge. So I think having a few examples of this might help. A recent one that I immediately thought of black swan sort of thinking was when, I mean, it's not that recent, it's a couple years ago at this point, but when the report came out that dietitians were starting to recommend whole milk instead of skim, that basically we'd kind of come full circle that wait, whole milk was actually best after all. What makes me think of this as being a black swan situation, or that the researchers were not originally not being black swan thinkers, is the fact that it can come from a sort of hubris of we understand exactly how every part of milk interacts with the human body, and we can decide which parts are good and which parts are bad, and let's get rid of the bad, and here's the recommendation. And then 20, 30 years later, it's like, oh crap, it was more complicated than we realized. The fat is actually good for heart health, whatever, you need to have it. So, and I'm all for research and learning as much as we can, but I think black swan thinking makes you put the desire to learn the details as secondary. Like, it's absolutely part of the process, but the more important thing is the bird's eye view and knowing the layout of your knowledge and the bigger ideas, and then you can get into the nitty-gritty. But if you just do nitty-gritty knowledge, then you're lost and you quickly think you know more about a complex system than you might actually. Another example that he uses that I think is really interesting, that's very similar to the nutrition one, is that he thinks that we should avoid adding CO2 to the atmosphere, not because of some sure science that it's bad for the atmosphere. Instead, because he thinks that the atmosphere and weather, well, he reverts to what we all know, which is the atmosphere and weather are highly complex systems that we still have a lot to learn about, and so messing with it is a bad idea. And what I love about this, it's a really good example of using black swan thinking, which is he's only using the knowledge we all have. In other words, we all share the knowledge that the weather is highly complex, that we're still learning a lot about it. And so he's assuming far less knowledge than really either side in the climate change debate, if you want to call it that, either side claims. He's claiming less knowledge and making a more heuristic judgment that is far more robust and safer than to assume anything about the atmosphere. So he's saying it's so complex and so crucial, and we know all this stuff is interconnected. Why the heck would we mess with it without being really sure? And so you can see how it makes your position that much more robust, because it's ironically, it's not based on knowledge, or not in the same way that the other positions are. It's based on more sure knowledge, less but more sure knowledge is a good way to say it. Which in this case is it weather is highly complex. So that is less knowledge than other people are claiming who are have a stake in this argument, but it's more sure. And so that's why it's so powerful. So yeah, I think we covered a lot of this. I'm looking through my notes right now. And oh, I guess one thing I was going to say is, yeah, just to sum up, kind of taking this into a mature epistemology, it's focusing on what knowledge is important and then zeroing it in on that knowledge, and a strong awareness of a knowledge as opposed to simply gaining knowledge. So, and one key thing as well is that humility in your knowledge is not the goal in of itself. It's really humility is simply a byproduct of having a more accurate view of the knowledge that you have. So I think when you come out of a book like this, you might feel like you have like one fifth the amount of real knowledge than you thought you had. Or when I say that, I mean like predictive power and understanding of complex systems that are out there in the world. And that's great, but it's not great just because it happens to be a more humble view. It's great because it's actually more accurate. That's the key thing, is that you're coming out with a more accurate understanding of just how complex these things are, just how significant the unexpected is. And it forces you to, in a sense, give up on the primary goal of just gaining knowledge and instead focus on the knowledge map, the what it is possibly unknown, what you can do about that, and retreating to these safer heuristics like the environment example or nutrition example, and only kind of stepping out with fear and trembling into more specific knowledge. Because as soon as you go out there, you're a more fragile ground. And so the extent you go out on that fragile ground of more specific, more singular knowledge rather than the broad, well understood knowledge, the more you go out on that, the less you should be staking on that, because you're in dangerous waters. So next time, I think I'm going to do a quick practical example. What's the exercise? I was going to say example, practical exercise of this with respect to my own faith in particular, a foundation for basic Christian belief, and just showing how I started out with a very non-black swan way of looking at it that ended up feeling hopeless because of the project and the amount of knowledge that would be involved to have it secure, and then the way that I approach it now. So that will be next time. And just to give a preview of two episodes from now, the other real venue I think I got a lot of the black swan thinking from was actually through software engineering, because you're dealing with these highly complex systems. And there was another book I read, and just the ideas. I've been a software engineer for almost 10 years now, and a lot of it comes from my experience there. So we will be talking about that soon. Thanks for listening.